The Guardian.
Football Weekly with James Richardson.
Today, it's the big freeze while Arctic conditions envelop Britain. Areas of high pressure reported for Alan Pardew at slumping Newcastle and between Fergie's ears after draw at the Lane. Meanwhile, Met men say the big thaw is on the way, but not for Arsenal because they're 7 points off the Champions League places. We ran up all the weekend's news, get the latest from abroad, tut-tut the Atkins sacking, talk transfers and enjoy your posts and tweets in today's Football Weekly. Welcome on board, everybody. It's an especially grizzled old hacks lineup today. We've got Jacob Steinberg in.
Hello.
Barry Glendenning.
Hello.
And ZonalMarketing.net's Michael Cox.
Hello.
Hi, Michael. Look at this. Fergus Sirilekson. Has there ever been a week where James doesn't predict that United are going to drop points? He asked. I think it was on Friday. Probably not. But I tell you what, it came good because a 1-1 draw at White Hart Lane, Clint Dempsey late goal. And it's the first time since the Premier League began that United haven't beaten Spurs in a season. Remarkable.
Yeah, it's the first time in 23 years they haven't beaten them, at least once in the season
right.
In the league. And Spurs really deserved it, I think. They were the better side probably throughout the game.
Even though United should have had a penalty.
They should have had a penalty. It was very strange they didn't give that for the foul on Rooney. You kind of wonder what the officials saw there that made them not give the penalty. It was probably as clear one as you'll see. But apart from the fact
they should have been 2-1
up. Well, they would have been 2-0 up, yeah. But you can't rely on decisions from the officials to win games. You have to do it yourself. And United didn't really play that well when they were going forward. They defended very well. They were very solid with Jones in midfield and Vidic and Ferdinand back together. But counter-attacking, the final ball was very poor quite often. And Spurs had some very good chances and had to make two very good saves, one from Dempsey, one from Bale. And there was a great block by Ferdinand as well on Defoe.
Right. But at the end, it was De Gea's weak wristed tap that let Dempsey take the points away.
Yeah, well, he can make brilliant saves. He's got absurd reflexes, but he still will sometimes make those little mistakes, which do cost them. And as Gary Neville was saying this morning, you can't just have 89 good minutes. You have to have 90.
Right? Isn't that so very, very true? I'm confused though. United solid at the back, but poor going forward.
Yeah, well, previously when they've sat deep, they've had great speed on the counter-attack, generally with Valencia or Young. They didn't use either of those two at the weekend. Young was injured, Valencia's out of form. And I just thought that they lacked players to carry the ball forward on the break. They did it a couple of times in the second half. But even then, they only tested Hugo Lloris twice all game, two shots on target, which is their worst of the season. And is a fair reflection, really, of a relatively feeble display, I thought. I think if you're going to sit deep, which is probably the right strategy against Tottenham, especially considering how they were opened up on the counter-attack at Old Trafford, you've got to have something going the other way and something to relieve the pressure. And in the end, I thought Tottenham didn't need to leave anyone back in defensive positions. They really just threw everyone forward and probably, well, certainly deserve the point, maybe even deserve more.
Barry, feeble he's calling the Premier League leaders.
I think that's a bit harsh, but I was intrigued by the manner in which United, a team who are sort of renowned for their playing and keeping going for 90 minutes all the time and being strong at the finish, in their last two games now they've been left sort of clinging on for dear life in the last 10 minutes. They got away with it against Liverpool, just, and didn't get away with it against Spurs. I also think I'm going to stick up for David De Gea here because I think he's getting a bit of stick he doesn't deserve. I think when he went to clear that ball, he kind of had to jump into two players, and I think they took all the momentum out of his leap, and therefore he wasn't able to punch it quite as hard as perhaps he should have.
Right, RVP, he's a machine.
Yeah, that's probably why if they do win the league, that's going to be why. Basically, the movement for the goal is just so good. There were two Spurs defenders at the back post both marking him, but it just doesn't matter what you're doing at the moment. He just gets away from you, and you just know there's just this moment where the ball goes into the box, and if you see it's heading towards him, you're just thinking goal, it's going to go in. And you know, it's a brilliant header.
He's worked very hard on his heading and very hard on his right foot. And I think the distribution of goals he scored this season, he scored a couple of headers and he scored a few with his right foot. He's just an all-round threat now. You can get the ball to him in any situation and he seems to work out a way to get a good strike at goal.
Hmm? Should Fergie worry? Lead down to 5 points, Man City beating Fulham convincingly.
No, I don't think so. I think City were always going to beat Fulham quite easily, and a point was roughly what you would expect from United Tottenham. I mean, obviously, having conceded a last-minute goal, it's a big blow.
Mm.
But I think if you'd offered a point to United at the start of the weekend, they would have been relatively
Well, it was interesting to hear Rio Ferdinand say that very thing after the game.
Yeah, that was surprising, that, because, you know, we can say that, but that's not usually the United mentality, is it? It's usually their mentality to go for 3 points in every fixture.
Right. And what about... Barry?
I was just going to say there was more sort of classic Fergie deflection as well after the game, because he focused on...
The linesman?
Abusing the linesman. I thought it was a pretty savage attack for which...
It was a savage attack.
He may well be punished. He seemed to be suggesting that that particular linesman has some sort of anti-Manchester United agenda going on.
Well, the rest of us do. Why shouldn't he? What about Spurs? Are they... Because they were kind of doing extremely well at this point last year as well, before falling away a little bit. Is this talk of Lewis Hultby joining them before the end of the transfer window? Is that to be taken seriously?
I read this morning, during the course of my extensive research for the rumour mill, that there is talk that Lewis Hultby may well have played his last game for Schalke on Friday night.
What a game it was, they say.
I think he set up two and scored one. I think Spurs are only sort of maybe one, two good signings away from being a real force and you know, a possible, well, almost definite Champions League contenders.
Wow, there you go.
Qualification contenders.
Well, Barry, they're up in, fourth place? They're 4 points clear of the team in fifth.
No, yeah. They're excellent side and great to watch. I enjoy watching.
Sandro being out for the rest of the season, though.
They got Scotty Scott Parker back, though.
Yeah. How does that rate to you?
So God never closes a door without opening a window.
Isn't that interesting? One possible problem with Spurs and the rest of the season is the lack of firepower up front. They've only got Defoe and...
Adebayor, when he is back from the Africa Cup of Nations. It's well known that they want Leandro Damião, and he said it over and over again via Spurs, so maybe we'll see that happen before the end of the transfer window. I have no idea there.
All right. Well, of course, if you want something badly enough, often the universe rewards you, Barry, no?
Does it?
I think so. Chelsea-Arsenal. Hey, 1.3 for Arsenal. Yikes, that's not very good.
No.
Chelsea, once again, a great start from them. 2-0 up after 16 minutes. Once again, though, they look like throwing it all away in the second half.
Yeah, it's a...
What happens in the second half to Chelsea?
If teams attack them, they're not very good defensively. And I love the Oscar, Mata, Hazard trio when they're playing well together and when they have the ball. But it's just a little bit of a problem sometimes for them when teams do come at them, because none of them are really very good at tracking back. And Arsenal, when they did go for them, looked very, very dangerous in the second half. Equally, in the first half, they just let them do what they wanted. And if you let players of that quality have the freedom that Arsenal gave them, then they're just going to hurt you. And really, it could have been 4 or 5 at half time. Arsenal was so poor. You could just tell that after the red card against City last week, Koscielny, where he's sent off a rugby tackling Dzeko, you would have thought the first thing they would have said was, don't do that again. And in the first minute, Diaby was... had his arms wrapped around Oscar in the area. Should have been a penalty, wasn't given. And it's just crazy sometimes what Arsenal do in defence. And it's just so immature, the whole thing. It's there's just no real mental strength there, although he keeps saying that they're very mentally strong.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, it was a great goal by Theo Walcott in the end.
He's a good finisher.
He's a good finisher. Diaby back, is that resolving their ongoing no steal in midfield problem? No, it's not. Okay.
Well, it doesn't matter if you don't bother working hard, which is what they didn't do. And when they did actually get about Chelsea, then they actually kind of stopped them a little bit. But in the first half, just Chelsea were able to do what they wanted. And it was one of the worst performances I've seen this season from a side in the first half.
There was a story in one of the papers today about some guy was given a tour around Arsenal's training centre last week by... one of the members of staff there, and he took a load of photographs, one of which I think was in Arsene Wenger's office, where the team for the Chelsea match was up on the wall. And so Chelsea, if they had gone to Reddit and seen this photo, would have known that Mertesacker wasn't going to be playing. But the guy also took a photo of the list of fines that... are meted out to Arsenal players for various offences. The most curious of which I thought was outdoor shoes in the dressing room, which which I presume is means muddy boots, but that's £100. Newspapers, laptops and phones in the medical room, £100. Newspapers in the dressing room, £100. And phone calls, taking phone calls in the building is £500.
Wow.
There was a story, a similar story at West Ham a few years ago under Pardew, where a similar kind of fine list got out. I'm not sure if it's true, but one of the fines was for illegal use of flip-flops.
Illegal use of flip-flops.
Would that be like Didier Drogba at the end
of the shower or something?
No, I think you're right, yeah.
Well, non-attendance of unused Arsenal players at home matches without the permission of the manager is £1,000.
£1,000, eh?
That's the price of a ticket, though. Yeah.
That's interesting. Let's have a quick word about Chelsea. Fernando Torres with a tough new Real Steel haircut. Another woeful performance, Michael. Another.
Yeah, it wasn't great. I mean, I think earlier in the season you could excuse it, but when Demba Ba's sitting on the bench for 80 minutes...
Why was Demba Ba sitting at the bench for 81 minutes?
I can only assume that they're desperate to keep him fresh for their midweek Capital One Cup game at Swansea, which they really do need to win, because although it's not the most prestigious competition, Chelsea have been in, I think, 7 competitions this year, when you include all the kind of bonus finals they've been in for winning the Champions League. And they're not going to win the Premier League, they're not going to win the they're out of the Champions League, so it's only really the Europa League and the Capital One Cup.
You say that as though they're not big competitions, but I take your point. They're up against Swansea, who beat them 2-0, of course, at Stamford Bridge. This time they're going to be down at the Liberty Stadium, while Arsenal are going to be playing West Ham. How big a game is that for both teams?
It's not very big for West Ham.
Isn't it?
No, because they'll lose. So, yeah.
Right. How big a game is that, Jacob, for Arsenal?
It's a very big game.
Right.
Yeah. And they'll win.
Do you think they will?
Yeah, of course they'll win.
Right.
It's 3 consecutive home games Arsenal have got now. But at the end of that run, you know, if they're not closer to the top four, then they've got serious problems.
Serious, because as I say, 7 points off the top four, but they've actually got a game in hand, this game against West Ham on Wednesday. Right, well, that's enough of that. We'll talk a little bit more about West Ham shortly, with your experiences of their game against QPR, Jacob. But right now, a little bit of music.
This week on The Guardian Audio Edition. Algeria hostage crisis over after further casualties. Spies, Chopin and a last-minute rescue in Libya. And our audiobook review is a crime special looking at Raymond Chandler's greatest stories and a new audiobook from Stuart Neville, Ratlines. To subscribe for free, go to audible.co.uk/Guardian Audio or find us on SoundCloud and iTunes. The Guardian Audio Edition, a new way to get the whole picture.
Right, Barry, you went to Selhurst Park on Saturday.
Yeah, and I'm still thawing out from it.
Ooh.
I can't remember ever being colder than I was on my way home from that game.
When
I felt like Scott in the Antarctic, you know, or his travelling companion, that bloke who sort of...
Captain Oates.
Yeah, went out of the tent and said, I may be gone sometime.
Yes.
Do you at least have some nice soup?
No, I thought there would be... Well, there was warming broth on offer in the rather Spartan Crystal Palace press room.
Yeah.
But, you know, understandably, they can't lay on lavish spreads because, unlike Reading, they're not sponsored by a top supermarket.
Right.
And they don't have any money. But they had this soup, which apparently was nice, but smelt so foul that I just couldn't bring myself to try any.
Right. When's the coldest you've ever been, Jacob?
Maybe on Saturday.
Really?
Yeah, at West Ham.
At West Ham?
Yeah.
All right. Michael?
I think Arsenal-Wigan about...
it's always a football match, is it? Yeah. Or is it
generally, there's just... Well, because usually when you're outside, you're moving around. But I've got a problem. I don't really drink hot drinks.
Oh.
So I can't even really warm myself up. Although at that Arsenal-Wigan game, I had my first hot drink in about 10, 12 years. And because I had no experience, really, of drinking hot drinks, I have no idea how long you're meant to take to kind of let it cool down.
Right.
So I just put it straight in my mouth and burnt most of my tongue.
Right, and it wasn't just there. You could actually feel it passing down.
Yeah, it was a horrible experience. I haven't had a hot drink since.
I can imagine.
So, yeah.
I don't have hot drinks either, but Barry bought me a coffee this morning. And
right, what happened there? Did he give you instructions on how to drink it?
No, he just put it down on my desk and said, here.
Well, no, you see, I knew he was in. I was coming in early to do the rooms, and I knew he was already in doing the tennis. So I kindly bought him a cup of coffee.
Yeah.
and put it down in front of him. And then I noticed about an hour later he hadn't touched it.
Right.
So I sort of said, you know, I bought that for you.
Yeah.
And he went, I don't actually drink coffee. I was sure
I didn't know what to say.
I'm amazed that there is this entire kind of subgenre of people who don't drink hot drinks.
Yeah, a lot of people find it weird, although, like you say, I think maybe people my age, not such prolific tea and coffee drinkers.
No, they are.
Are they?
Yeah.
Hot drinks aren't hip.
Right.
Daddy-o.
Right.
Actually, I used to work in an office where there was about 12 people and I was the only one who didn't drink tea.
Yeah.
It was quite uncomfortable.
No, it's good though, because it means that if you work in an office and you don't drink tea or
you don't
coffee,
have to make
you don't
have to tea do it. Or yeah. coffee, right?
Yeah, it's all tactics.
Okay.
Yeah, see?
I get it. Of course, this was the Doogie Freeman derby.
Yeah, Doogie was back at his old club, having left them 3 months ago, and a welcome committee had gathered at the gates of Selhurst Park to boo him off the Bolton bus. So, you know, it's pretty childish. They obviously have very short memories, because he's done a lot for that club. But he got a very warm reception in the ground, and he looked quite relieved to have got a warm reception.
Doogie Freeman is a name I could say for the rest of the podcast.
Jamaluddin Abdujaparov is my favourite.
Oh, there we go. One for cycling
Tashkent, or what is it? Tashkent Terror?
Yep. Have you got a name that you enjoy saying, Michael?
I used to like, there was a former Venezia striker you might remember called Federico Magallanes.
Jeepers.
Which I thought was a fantastic name.
Right.
It wasn't very good, but it was a good name.
I like Balzaretti, the Italian left back.
Italian names are fun, aren't they?
Yeah.
Quagliarella.
But he's like in Inglourious Basterds, his name. Yeah, you know, where they pretend to be Italian.
What does he call himself?
Margaretti.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and Christoph Waltz asks him to say it over and over again because he knows they're not Italian. And,
right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool.
There's quite a few Spanish names with the lispy bits that I like saying.
All right. Angel Rangel. Yeah. I think everyone loves Angel
Rangel. Zubizarreta.
Oh, yeah, that's a nice one.
He's got three lispy bits.
Mauricio Pochettino.
He's Argentinian.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, that's a name that's on everyone's lips this weekend, of course, for reasons that we'll be getting onto later. Sorry, Jacob.
As was Loic Remy.
Right, Loic Remy, yeah.
Yeah. Looked like they could have quite a fruitful partnership with Adel Taarabt for about 20, 25 minutes. Taarabt set up his goal.
Mm-hmm.
It was very obvious what QPR were trying to do is basically just hope that they could get Taarabt on the ball and then hit West Ham on the break, which is what they managed to do for that goal.
Mm.
It was a really good finish, actually, from Remy. But they were very, very lucky to get away with a point, QPR. Cesar had to make a lot of very good saves.
Very good saves, yeah.
Yeah, he played off the line. And
Big Sam afterwards saying, I've never been involved in a team that managed to produce 46 crosses. Is that true? Did West Ham 46?
It was 56 crosses.
56 crosses?
According to Opta, it's 56.
Isn't that an insane number of crosses?
Well, that's what Jarvis does, though. He just whips them in over and over again, sometimes without any real regard for where they're going or if there's anybody in the area.
So that still counts as a cross,
is it? Still a cross, yeah.
Jacob, James Warner posting in saying, do you think Arsenal's loan deal with Shamak stipulates he must play against Arsenal, unlike all the other loan deals in the UK?
he wasn't that bad, but he actually, Allardyce got booed when he took off Shamak after about
an
hour.
They booed Allardyce?
Well, just the decision to take him off, you know, it was a bit childish, yeah. But he should have scored two headers, and he could have had a penalty. But he did do this. I was speaking to a couple of Arsenal mates after the game, and they said, yeah, he just, whenever he's in the area, he doesn't actually bother shooting. He just tries to look for a penalty. And he went through and basically kicked his own foot and then went down and was like looking at how Webb was like, give me a penalty for that. That's not a foul, Ryan. You kicked yourself there. You know, he could be all right, but he hasn't scored for about 2 years, I think.
So. Yeah. Yeah, well, you say that the game against Arsenal isn't a big one for West Ham, but Hammers have only taken 5 from the last 21, same number of points as Fulham and Villa have got. Norwich, Newcastle and Wigan have only taken 4 from the last 21, while Southampton have taken 10 from 21 and got their manager fired for that. Reading 10 from 21, QPR 8 from 21, thanks to that point there. Oh, you know what we haven't done? Joe Cole.
Scored a goal.
He scored a goal.
Yeah,
and
he gave Harry Redknapp a bottle of champagne after.
He
the
did.
Game. Yeah,
lovely.
Yeah, that's nice.
In recognition of the fact that Harry, did so much for him when he signed him at 12 to West Ham.
And then he turned him down.
But when he scored, what was the feeling like at Upton Park? Was there a special
first goal for West Ham for 10 years, just over 10 years? It was pretty easy goal.
Was it an emotional moment, do you think?
It was too cold, really, to be emotional,
Really?
Yeah. Okay. But he nearly took off his... He thought about taking off his shirt, but then he realised it was too cold.
Too cold?
Yeah.
Right, OK. Well, I mentioned Reading and Newcastle in that list of people who are sinking fast and on the rise. And, of course, those two teams met at St James's Park on Saturday. Were there any fans with their shirts off there, I wonder?
Where, sorry?
Up at St James's.
I don't know. Oh. I mean, generally, if it's really, really cold or wet, Newcastle fans will wear shirts. But there's probably a few hardy.
I bet there were. I salute those people.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Anyway, what a story this was. Reading's win at Newcastle. This was a team who, as you probably read, had the worst away record in all the Football League, who hadn't had an away win in the Premier League since 2008. Of course, they weren't in it for several years. But, and went down a goal, and Lafondre.
Yeah, off the bench. I mean, Newcastle dominated the majority of the game, but it was just two very smart finish. Well, one slightly fortunate finish and one very
brilliant
smart
setup by that man, Hope Agpen.
Yeah, that was it. Was slightly lucky, wasn't it? But I think it's nice to see Lafondre a little bit like Grant Holt and Ricky Lambert, just demonstrating that being a good finisher is, a transferable skill across the divisions. He's maybe not the quickest, not the strongest. Don't think he's great on the ball, but in the penalty box, he is very, very ruthless.
Little love for Federici. People were having a go at Federici, the Reading keeper, but he had a good game, didn't he?
Yeah, he made a few. Yeah, some very good saves, actually. Yeah. Mm.
All right. Well, how about this? Reading have now won four of their last five games in all competitions. Is it like last season over again?
Yeah, exactly what they started to do last season, around the time against... I think they beat Ipswich with the last-minute goal or something in January and just went on a relentless run and won the championship from there. Maybe they'll do it, but they're not going to win the league.
Do you think they can do it again, Jacob?
There's enough rubbish down there.
Yeah.
I think the bottom half are all in danger, really. I mean, you'd expect West Ham to stay up, for example, but everyone else, I think, is in trouble. Interesting, I was looking at the league table just before coming in, and there's not a single English manager in the top half of the Premier League, and there's about five in the bottom half.
How many Glaswegians?
A lot, I think, as many as there are English managers, actually.
One Argentinian as well.
And one Argentinian as well. Very interesting, we'll come on to that very shortly.
Reading seem to be winning without playing well, which is...
Mark of a championship team.
That's what they did last season.
they could win the title.
That's what they did last season as well.
Right.
Yeah.
They did win the title.
They just keep going, though. They just have this brilliant spirit under McDermott, and even when they seem like they're out of games, they just keep putting the ball in the area, and they've got some good strikers as well who can finish chances.
Newcastle, in the meantime, hey, it's toxic. I've just done that little inverted commas thing. It's toxic, the atmosphere there. Booze, as Alan Pardew took off Kabay. Niall Ranger, that's a name we can enjoy saying as well, tweeting saying, certain fans need not to come and support this team. Coming out to boo us, stay at home, don't need your booze, say no more. And he put some exclamation marks on the end. So.
Were there any hashtags?
No.
What?
No hashtags. Oh. But anyway, so there you go, it's a split. Crisis on Tyneside. When you think about the fact, fifth to bottom three almost, fifth to fifth last at the moment.
Yeah, I saw Newcastle when they lost against Brighton in the Cup, and there was just that feeling at that point that it was just mainly the injuries. But to lose to Reading at home, when they do have to play us back like Kabay and Gutierrez as well, was back as, and in the side, and Colaccini... that's just so worrying, I think. And you look at them and you think they've got enough home games to do it, but that's kind of the game that makes you think.
Do have an interesting run of games coming up. They've 6-pointer with Villa.
Yeah, that's next Tuesday.
Yeah, and then they've...
It's a big game.
Chelsea at home, Spurs away, Southampton at home, Swansea away. But between those, they have to go to... They've Europa League tie against Kharkiv. So they've... a trip to Ukraine, which I'm sure they could do without.
Right. At least they've signed a promising young French defender. Or this one they haven't let slip through their fingers. Is that right, Barry? What? Yanga Mabuya?
Yeah, apparently yesterday it was all but a done deal, but now it looks like they might get gazumped.
No.
Arsenal
are
going to hijack the deal. So this will be the second time in this window. They've been tantalisingly close to getting a good French player in, and... ended up with nothing.
What's happened to Graham Carr?
Well, Graham Carr just scouts the players. He's not his job to sign them.
Oh, okay. Being unfair. I'm going to move on then. Nods all round. Yep. Moving on from Newcastle. Reading. Wigan lost at home to Sunderland.
Can Wigan.
Yeah.
Roberto Martinez. He's renowned as a brilliant manager.
Yeah.
Why?
Michael.
Well, I don't think his squad is very good, and he has got them out of danger a few times in the past. I appreciate his I think he's probably slightly overrated, I do agree. But if you look at the squad of players they've got, I think there's very few players in that squad that the teams around them would want to take. You know, they are relatively average players that I think have been overperforming for the past couple of seasons. Yeah. But I do find Martinez annoying because he usually does this thing where he says, I don't like to talk about referees, but we had a couple of bad decisions against us. Mm. And then on Saturday he said, well, we've got no one but ourselves to blame, you know, when decisions go against you like that. Well, you know, you can't say you're not blaming anyone and then put the blame on the referee. But he gets away with that because he's not one of the top managers.
Right. Because he's foreign as well. That's your point, isn't it?
Nice.
If his name was Robert Martin, he'd be...
Well, I'm not saying he's a bad manager, right. And he seems a very shrewd and astute bloke, but it's just Wigan are constantly down amongst the dead men. And yes, their squad is a bit threadbare, and any time they have good players, they get sold on. So, you know, that's not going to help, but... Yeah, I just think he's a bit overrated. And possibly, yes, because he's a good-looking, well-spoken, intelligent Spanish man.
Mm, he's a lovely pundit as well, isn't he?
Oh, he's a brilliant pundit.
Great. Villa, hey, they got a point at West Brom. Of course, they were hoping for more. That Benteke goal.
Mm.
Was that the goal of the weekend? There were some lovely swerving Swazzy shots this time around, wasn't there?
Swazzy.
Yeah.
Mm.
But that was, I think, my favourite. Don't know if you have a view on that, Michael?
I preferred Sturridge's goal.
Really?
Against Norwich, I thought it was good. And also Swansea's third, which was scored by De Guzman.
Oh, yeah.
There were,
was that the team move?
Yeah.
The orchestral manoeuvre?
But there were some cracking goals. I mean,
right.
You could get a decent goal of the month contender lineup from just that weekend.
Right. It's not a competition, but just, you know, those are the
You
the
can't
letters.
Phone in.
You can't phone in. Right. What the Liverpool with the Sturridge goal? Tell me again about that.
A Downing assist.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
well, a great
across,
ball
yeah.
up to Downing, and then he just kind of first timed it across.
Yeah.
Actually, Atletico Madrid scored a very similar goal to that, yes. They're almost identical.
Really?
All from Thiago out to the flank, across to the far post, and put in at the far post. Far post, yeah.
Right, okay. Anyway, Villa now play big game against, we were talking about Chelsea and their big game in the League Cup semi-finals against Swansea. How about that Villa-Bradford match, Michael?
Yeah, it's very big. You'd think almost as much for confidence as for the prestige of getting to the final, because that's a game they really shouldn't be losing over one leg, you know, away when Arsenal lost. That was obviously a pretty bad result, but over two legs I think it's even worse, really.
3-1, can they turn it around?
I think they probably can. I mean, Bradford have got nothing to lose, which is the dangerous part. There's no real pressure on them. Even if they do lose 2-0, they'll go out as heroes and having earned the club a lot of money. Whereas for Villa, I think that would be psychologically a huge blow.
Absolutely.
Which would be a shame, because I think what Lambert's doing is very brave and very commendable. And I know there have been some poor results, but personally, I really hope they get out of it, because I think in the long term, he's building a very good side.
Well, they've got Vlaar and Dunn, who are set to come back.
Vlaar will be helpful, yeah.
Cool.
Bradford had the weekend off, you know.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
I think it's a good thing, because they've played 40 games already this season.
That's a lot of games.
Yeah. I think they trained on Saturday, but just to give the players a rest. And you know,
plus it was cold.
And it was cold, yeah. They were supposed to travel to Port Vale, so not having to do that was probably a help, you know.
That's a plus in anyone's book. Okay, right. You mentioned the Suarez goal. Was it? No, the Sturridge goal.
Yeah.
Because, of course, the pair of them now, they're almost inseparable in my mind. I can't think of one without the other. It's the new SAS, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, Greg Bukowski's very pleased with what he saw from Suarez and Sturridge on Saturday. Just said, basically, it means that you aren't able to put two or three men on Suarez all the time. You have to watch out for Daniel Sturridge. And
right.
Although he's a bit of a... He can be a bit annoying and does silly dances when he scores sometimes.
Oh, come on, Jacob.
They
That's
are silly
the joy
dances.
Of the game.
No, they are silly dances. There's no joy about that. He did the first one against Mansfield.
Boo to you.
Boo to him. He's a very good player, though, if he gets his focus and...
He's smiling now as well. Did you
is
see
he not
that?
Frowning now? Oh.
He's big smiles all round. He's loving it. Great little dummy. Everyone loved the dummy that on the first goal, no? Let Suarez go through.
He's got a lot of talent. It's just sometimes there's that thing where he just gets it on the right, cuts in, and shoots over with his left foot when he should pass it.
Right. The Henderson goal?
He's a good player. I don't really put him in with the Carroll and Downing flops, because I think there was a time, wasn't there, where Manchester United and Manchester City were actually looking in for about £20 million. And
I thought you were going to say 20 minutes.
Well, it was about 20 minutes, and they thought, no, not good enough. But I think, again, he's someone who was really highly thought of when he was at Sunderland, and you know, he's got a lot of potential again.
Liverpool are now on the same number of points as Arsenal. How much potential do they have, Barry? That's a question asked by Lewis Britton Jones. Do you think they could make it to the top four? Go on, say something crazy.
No, I don't. But, you know, that really wouldn't read too much into that.
They're on the march, though, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, beating Norwich 5-0, that's a great result.
They're not conceding.
And it's the second tonking they've given Norwich this season.
Mm.
So they're doing that against all the sides in the bottom half, though.
But these are the games they used to lose.
Draw, yeah.
Yep.
But the test is still against sides in top half. They haven't beaten anyone.
Defeat at Man United. Yeah. All right, fair enough.
You said Henderson goal there, actually, which reminded me of another name I used to like saying. Henderson Gill, who I believe was a rugby league player.
Right.
In the 80s.
A little bit off message there.
Sorry. Yeah. Yeah.
No, but good. Mm. Swansea Stoke. Michael Owen. But Swansea actually took Stoke apart.
Yeah, they did.
Good. Michael Owen scored.
I read, I was in the Times, the guy, I can't remember his name, he does the stats in the back of the Times. It's
Bill Edgar.
Over 10 years ago since Michael Owen and Joe Cole both scored on the same day.
Mm-hmm. How about that? Right. But Swansea great, and they're playing Chelsea, blah, 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 blah.
It'll be interesting to see how they line up against Chelsea and what tactics they use. What do you think will happen, Michael, or do you have an opinion yet?
Well, the strange thing about Swansea is, for all the good football they're playing, they almost haven't found their best 11. They don't know whether to play Michu as the lone striker or just behind Danny Graham, who was, again, very good at the weekend and might be leaving the club, seemingly, which I find slightly surprising.
Mm.
Because I think they're probably better when Michu's up front and they pack the midfield a little bit. De Guzman came in and scored 2 goals at the weekend. And again, you know, all the focus has been on Michu, but they've had a couple of other good signings. Chico at the back, I think, is increasingly looking strong.
Mm.
And De Guzman,
that's a good name, actually. Chico Flores.
That's a very good name.
Yeah.
And De Guzman, who I saw a lot for Villarreal last year, who was actually Cazorla's replacement at Villarreal, didn't look particularly talented, but has really stepped up for Swansea.
But cool. He was sort of responsible for both their goals again in the first leg, because it was him pressurising Ivanovic that forced Ivanovic to make those kamikaze errors that cost his side.
Indeed so. Well, that's one of the... Is that on Tuesday, Swansea, Chelsea?
Wednesday, I think.
Oh, yeah, that's on Wednesday, and the Bradford game's on the Tuesday. Right. And on the Monday, i.e. today, so it might have happened by the time you hear this, listeners, is Southampton against Everton, debuting their new manager, Mauricio Pochettino. They've only been defeated twice in the last 12 games, Southampton. Lots been said, lots been written about the axing of Nigel Adkins, the manager who taken them to 2 straight promotions and got them a little bit out of trouble of late as well. I suppose in some ways you can't argue with the club's decisions of late, given how well they've risen, but then to axe the man who's been the fulcrum of that just seemed extraordinary.
Yeah, I think it was very harsh, especially because Adkins had seemingly learned his lessons from the start of the season. They'd put together a good run, undefeated in 6. So it was the timing as much as the sacking itself.
Mm. Given the way things normally work, this will be a decision they probably took some time ago before Adkins started getting these results. Would that be right?
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that. I mean, they clearly had a successor lined up straight away, so it was, like you say, a predetermined decision.
And he said in his press conference as well, Pochettino, I know these players, I've been studying them for some weeks, which kind of suggested that unless he had a particular interest in Saints and their well-being, that he might have been given the nod.
Cortese, though, is a very strange case. There's that story in Danny Taylor's Observer column yesterday about... in the boardroom at St Mary's, there was a picture of the 76 Cup winning team, Laurie McMenemy, I think, and it's been replaced by a picture of a boat.
Oh, yeah.
It was a present from Doncaster, I think, a few years ago, which was the story. And if you look at the stories about Adkins and you look have a look at Matt Letizia on Twitter, the relationship between him and the club legends at Southampton is very fractious as well. So it's basically a club run completely on his whim. Mm. And, you know, as much as we say it's very harsh, I mean, you just don't know what these people are going to do sometimes.
It's funny because
no logic to it.
There's the suggestion that he is almost jealous of people's popularity with the Letizia and now with Adkins. But at the same time, this is a man who really shuns publicity. He doesn't give interviews or anything. So He doesn't seem to be particularly after the limelight himself.
No, and you would have thought that maybe, having taken that decision, that he should have been alongside Pochettino in that press conference on whenever it was, on Friday or Thursday, when he was sacked. But no, he wasn't there. He left the guy there who can't speak English to fend for himself with the press. And again, it was just crazy to sack Adkins. I don't get it at all. But, you know, sometimes people like him, Abramovich, they do, or you know, Blackburn as well, Nottingham Forest, they do what they want, and screw the fans.
They are entitled to do what they want. And, you know, their decisions may not be popular, but it's their club. They can.
Yeah, but why?
Pardon?
Why do it, though?
Oh,
he can do what he wants. He's the boss. Yeah. But
well,
he presumably
has his reasons, whether
they're
good
or bad.
But what are the actual reasons? I mean, what is the...
Well, he might feel that there is some benefit to be gained by bringing this continental manager with his emphasis on the youth game, and perhaps...
Right, but so Adkins has a huge emphasis. I mean, look at the players they brought through under Adkins. You know, he's playing a brilliant guy, Luke Shaw, at left-back.
Well, if he feels that Pochettino is an upgrade, that's fair enough, but... I don't know if he is, but if he is, he might think he is, and, okay, then you can understand that would be a motivation. But even if he thinks he is, why do it now?
Yeah, they were doing really well. They'd just drawn at Chelsea. Maybe sacked for not beating Chelsea, I don't know.
But another benefit of owning the club is that you don't have to explain your decisions.
Right.
And look, Adkins isn't going to end up foraging in dustbins for food or begging for spare change. He presumably got a big payoff, and he will get another job. And good luck to him in it, whatever it turns out to be.
Producer Ben's got three names that he likes saying. One is Jussi Uskalainen, another one is Papa Booba Diop, and the other one was Steve McManaman. Well, they're all lovely names, aren't they? Here's a name we all love saying, Sidlo in Spain.
Hello, James.
Hi. How are you?
All right, thank you.
Good. I'm here with Michael Cox, Barry Glendinning and Jacob Steinberg, and we're excited.
Hello, everybody.
Yeah, we're excited to know about a weekend that saw a whopping big Real Madrid win against Valencia and a Barcelona defeat. What on earth happened?
Yep. First one this season, 20 games into the season. And after the game, as you can imagine, there was lots of kind of, how would I describe it, putting it into context moments from players and managers, and Messi saying, for example, well, it had to happen sometime. Although, of course, we'd started to enter into a little bit of a mindset where we were starting to think, actually, does it have to happen sometime? Could this be the season where a team finally goes through it unbeaten? That's now gone. And I think that may have taken a tiny bit of the motivation out of the league for Barcelona, because I think they know they're going to win the league. I think what they were trying to achieve was a league that was really special somehow, whether it's by beating Real Madrid's points totals from last year, which of course is still possible, or perhaps going through the season unbeaten. That didn't happen. They blew a 2-0 lead against Real Sociedad and lost 3-2. They haven't won there since 2007.
Well, what happened? Were they a bit complacent? Are they taking their foot off the gas? What was the story?
I mean, it's tempting to look at it from a complacency point of view. They were 2-0 up. They hit the post twice. They wasted a couple of really good chances. But they were pressured by Real Sociedad, and they always looked a little bit uncomfortable at the back. And if you look at the statistics, by the end of the game, I think Real Sociedad had 14 or 15 shots and Barcelona 6 or 7. So there's no doubt that Real Sociedad deserved it. Barcelona were probably affected by the red card for Gerard Piqué, which was a kind of a pretty petty red card, but I think a justified one for two yellows. So I think Barcelona were caught out by that occasional defensive weakness that they have anyway, and perhaps a touch of complacency, but I'd say it was more about just failing to take some really good chances.
And this notion of teams that press them put them a little bit in difficulty, as we've seen.
We saw it a bit with Malaga in the Copa del Rey, but I think that was slightly different because they play with not with their normal side in the second half, because it was a Copa del Rey game and Busquets wasn't playing, and certainly if you pressure Alex Song, you're going to get the ball off him. If you pressure Busquets, you generally don't. What was strange about this weekend was that actually Barcelona had players on the pitch like Busquets and Puyol and so on who should be able to relieve that pressure, but what they didn't have was Piqué, and he, better than anyone else, can bring the ball out from the back and overcome that first wave of kind of attackers bearing down on you.
Right. Now, in the meantime, old Jose Mourinho, has he tamed that the rampant egos in the Real Madrid locker room?
Yeah, it's very difficult to understand a lot of what Mourinho's done in the last few weeks in terms of his behaviour. And I suppose one theory, and I think it's a theory that probably has some degree of logic, is that he's had to be extreme because he's seen a situation in the dressing room that he needs to get in control of. I think that there's something to be said for that. I think there's something to be said for looking at it in terms of it had got so bad that he started to kind of, if you like, lash out a bit wildly, and perhaps it's worked. And Madrid were brilliant last night, but those problems will remain, and I think the potential to overcome those problems, certainly in the Champions League, was always there anyway. And the league, well, they're 15 points behind Barcelona, so they're not going to win the league anyway, but they were brilliant last night. That said, they were partly brilliant because Valencia did what Valencia have tended to do in recent years and play extremely high up the pitch with no pressure at all. And when you do that to a counter-attacking team like as good as Real Madrid, they're going to absolutely murder you.
What about Pochettino? What little inkling can you give us about what lies in store for Southampton supporters and whether he is an upgrade on that Nigel Adkins fella?
Well, look, I don't know enough about Nigel Adkins to be able to tell you whether he's an upgrade. So obviously what I can tell you is what Pochettino's been like rather than whether Adkins should have gone. I mean, obviously on the face of it, from what's happened at Southampton, it seems a completely bizarre decision. And another little snippet, by the way, to kind of underline that, is that I think one of the things that Pochettino, I imagine that one of the things that Pochettino impressed Southampton with was the work that he's done with kids at Espanyol, bringing people through, giving them an opportunity, making them part of the first team squad and imposing a really clear idea on the club at virtually all levels. And I imagine that Southampton are probably looking at that to some extent in terms of, right, make youth teams part of our success, which actually Southampton have been pretty successful with over the last few years anyway. But what makes that a bit weird is for very strange and long-winded reasons, which I won't get into, I know one of the youth teamers at Southampton, and the thing he said to me was, well, but Adkins has been brilliant with us.
Yeah.
So it's not like he was a manager that wasn't doing that anyway. What can Pochettino bring? He's charismatic, although that charisma is going to be very, very difficult in a different language, and particularly coming to the club midway through the season. He makes his teams pressure very, very high up the pitch. They're really quite aggressive and quite good to watch. They've given Barcelona real problems, despite having a couple of real hefty wallopings from Barcelona over the last few years. They've given Barcelona problems. And I think Espanyol have been quite good to watch. And I think given the limitations of resources that he had there, I think he did a really, really good job, despite the fact that obviously when he was finally sacked, and I know everybody's pointing this out, they were bottom of the table. I think they'd only won twice in 12, was it? Something like that, twice in 9. And this, the start of the season was a disaster. And it's also true, they've been far, far better since Javier Aguirre took over. And so clearly, sacking him has been a good thing for Espanyol. But generally speaking, I think Pochettino is a good manager, but I have obviously significant doubts about whether he can continue to be as good coming into Southampton in this situation at right now, at this moment, with all that entails. I think it's going to be really quite hard for him.
Sid Lowe in Spain. In other world football news, in Australia, the A-League, Michael. Did you see any A-League this weekend?
No.
Okay. You'll have missed Alex Del Piero scoring with each of his 4 shots on target against Wellington. It's the first time he's scored, I think, 4 goals in a game. So how about that? And moving on further down the league hierarchy, Serie A, Barry. I tell you, there's so much to talk about. So much. If you want, you can leave now, because I'm just going to go on about Serie A. That goes to you, for you too, listeners, because loads of you ring in and you write and you say, why I don't want to hear about Serie A. Tell us more about Doncaster and stuff like that. But there's been so much. Have Doncaster had 2 points given back to them? No. Napoli did on Thursday. The court ruled that it was unconstitutional, the 2 points that had been docked from them just before Christmas. You can ask me questions about why if you want, or I'm just going to move on. Jacob, you know why, do you?
Yeah.
Just don't care. Okay. But it's seen as judicially a very significant case, this, because it means it's going to change the whole kind of notion of responsibility, what they call objective responsibility, that Napoli were being penalised because 2 of their players had turned down a match-fixing attempt but didn't report it, so the club were then penalised points, but they've been given them back. They then drew in a game you saw, Michael, away to Fiorentina.
Yeah.
So they dropped 2 points.
The only real noteworthy thing was that Fiorentina centre-back, right-sided centre-back, Facundo Roncalia, scored from his own half.
He did indeed. Somewhere inside his own half.
Yeah, I'd say it was roughly Beckham against Wimbledon
position.
But it wasn't actually a shot. It was essentially a long ball towards Luca Toni that De Santis completely misjudged. It bounced on the edge of the penalty area, bounced over his head and went in the goal.
All right. Does anybody know, asked Anko United, what that silly Michu Luca Toni celebration of seemingly screwing something into one's head is meant to represent?
Yeah.
It's seemingly screwing something into your head.
Well, Luca Toni said it was to do with fans and their transmitter radios, wasn't it?
Well, I thought he said that he had a group of friends in Florence, and when something was particularly crazy, like, I can't believe that's just happened, he would do this kind of, wow, that's crazy gesture, and then he started using it for his goals. That was what I thought. Billy Therino, NYC, says, James, can you please tell me the Italian word for getting stabbed in the bum by ultras in Rome? I believe it was a Roman Dalek word. Oh, I was going to just check that I got this right, but I think it's a sculataccia. Culo is your arse in Italian, and also means luck. If you have a lot of arse, it means you're a very lucky person. A couple of other posts. The runaway founder happened to have arrived in Johannesburg on business in the week the Africa Cup of Nations has started, and nobody I've met has even mentioned the tournament. Nobody, from business contacts to taxi drivers. In fact, rugby, blah, 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 has been brought up twice in that time, but nothing on the ACN. Odd. Interesting.
He could initiate the conversation himself.
He could do, couldn't he? But it's kind of socially significant that it's not buzzing with ACN talk, but we'll be hearing perhaps more from that man, Jonathan Wilson, on Thursday. And
Wilson would have loved that opening double bill, wouldn't it? Nil, 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 nil.
Yeah.
Oh, he'd have been in hog heaven.
Yeah, strangely, he sounded actually a little bit disappointed about it.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
When did you hear him speak?
Well, no, he tweeted his disappointment.
That was just irony.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
My mistake. Right, beginning to lose its shape badly now, this podcast. All sorts of other talking points in Italy this weekend, including Juve's win, Paul Pogba. You saw the goal, Michael, didn't you? And it was
He scored two goals.
Two goals.
But it wasn't just the goals. I mean, he's not going to score 25-yard swerving half volleys every week. But he might well command the midfield every week and start the attacks, which is what he did in the absence of Andrea Pirlo. Juventus didn't really miss Pirlo, which is a great compliment to Pogba.
Huge news, that. And a big win for Juventus against Udinese. In other news, Genoa sacked their manager. I say sacked, this is quite a regular thing. Del Neri got binned after 9 defeats in 13. They brought back, they're now in the bottom three, they brought back Davide Ballardini, who came in to great effect 2 years ago, no doubt you recall. They were down in the danger zone. They ended up 10th, so naturally they fired him at the end of that season and got somebody else in. And they've now changed managers 6 times, I think, since he was last there, but they brought him back in again. And we'll see how that works out. In other news, Roma and Inter had a meh 1-1 draw Sunday night at Stadio Olimpico. Snyder has now gone to Galatasaray. A lot of question marks about Coutinho maybe making a move to Liverpool, which I think would be a really bad move. I like Coutinho. I think there's potential there.
Yeah,
a bad move for Inter, I'm saying.
Yeah, but I'm not sure Liverpool need another player in that mould. Really, I'd say you've got Sturridge in. Spend the next half season focusing on integrating him.
Right. Sounds fair to me. And just on the whole transfer front, how about Milan, who seem really positive about getting Kaká back, possibly on a season and a half loan from Real Madrid. Kaká's going to take a massive pay cut to make it happen. He was back in Milan last week. And although I think he was suspended for Real Madrid's game anyway, so it wasn't like he was dropped or anything. And Balotelli, again, that one seems like it might happen. Previously cash-strapped Milan finding a bit of cash for bad boy Mario. Anyway, Barry, now that we've come to the end of our rainbow, I must just say Yona Brooklyn, who's an avid American listener, ex-college footballer, United supporter, and she heads off to Williamsburg, Brooklyn, to a Spurs bar, and they'd love a shout-out. That's what we're all about, isn't it? Mm. Shout-outs.
To Spurs bars in Brooklyn.
Absolutely.
Is that the shout-out? Is that all a shout-out is?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, super. Well, that really does seem to be it. We've come to the end of our rainbow in a very real sense. We'll be back on Thursday with Raphael Honigstein. Should be a bit of Jonathan Wilson on the phone. Not sure what other delights producer Ben has in store for you. But in the meantime, many thanks to Michael Cox, Barry Glendening, and Jacob Steinberg. And you, listener, have a super week till Thursday.